Welcome to Nothing Ventured with me, Arish Shah. Today on the podcast with me, I had George Askew and Sam Etele. George and Sam are the co-founders of Thema, which supports and enables emerging managers to launch venture capital strategies, providing them with an all-in-one package. In today's episode, we talked about, is fund structuring and regulation really cool?
George is the person to go to on structuring, so having that sort of
complementary... So you pick key structures, essentially.
Yeah, essentially.
And it works really well. Yeah. It's a really nice process. It's go through the filter, but we make decisions together in terms of, because effectively what we're trying to back here is people that want to build fund management businesses.
Acting as a catalyst for LPs, 486 funds signing up within 6 weeks of launching.
So we launched 8 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. 8 weeks.
Yeah, we've had north of 450 funds apply.
Only 6-8% of VCs are operators in the UK versus 60% in the US. The fact that LPs have come back to the market and started engaging with funds, and is the lack of patient capital having an impact on the ecosystem? Let's get straight into it. This is Nothing Ventured with me, Arish Shah, the podcast where I talk to the people behind the stories that make the venture capital ecosystem go round. I've been working with startups from pre-seed to Series C for the last decade, and companies that I've worked with have gone on to realize value and exit or raise funds in excess of $500 million. I really hope you enjoy the episode. And if you have a guest that you'd love to see me have on, or you have a comment on any of the episodes that I've recorded so far, do reach out to me on LinkedIn or Twitter. I'd love to hear from you. Let's get straight into it. George, Sam, great to have you here in the studio with me.
Thanks very much for having us.
Okay, let's dive straight in. So we here on the podcast have always had a bias for emerging managers. It's always incredibly exciting to see someone with a completely new thesis coming into the market and bringing new ideas into the ecosystem. From your perspective, what are the biggest challenges that emerging managers find when they are trying to launch? And what is Thema's approach to helping reduce those challenges?
Yeah, from my perspective, one of the biggest barriers is with regards to the financial barriers to entry of setting up a venture fund. I mean, outside of a select few within the industry, it is very difficult to go 18 to 24 months without earning a salary. That ultimately creates a barrier even before you have started to raise. Mm-hmm. That sort of mental barrier of, do I have enough money? Have I saved enough, etc.? The associated cost then with actually raising a vehicle and structuring that vehicle correctly, making sure you're FCA regulated or sit under an appointed representative, the ongoing admin fees, et cetera, means that it's very difficult to raise a micro VC fund in particular. If you're talking about 30, 40, 50 million pound funds, the economics start to make sense. Anything sub that is just very difficult from a financial perspective. Or just add on to that, again, I guess, with regards to the structuring element of things, it's just not that commonly known across the market. And that's really your forte, George.
I know. I feel like you just took all the words out of my mouth in terms of like what where I sort of fit in with the program. And Sam's background obviously is slightly different to mine, and that's very complimentary. I'm the kind of, I think fund structuring and regs are cool.
You're an N of one.
I know, but actually it turns out I'm not. There are others out there like me, not many. And basically it's the not knowing, you know, like you said, you've got your network, you've got your track record, you're moving into this space. It's very unfamiliar territory of when should you get regulated? How should you be regulated? When looking to structure your fund, what domicile, what LP base are you looking at? And sometimes, you know, you've got to think a little bit further ahead. I think Sam's right in saying there's about 52% of the capital in Europe is government or public money. Mm-hmm. You know, what do they look for in a fund? And also bearing in mind, they're probably going to be looking towards fund two. They're probably also going to review your fund one. And whilst there are opportunities out there that may be a little bit more attractive from a cost perspective. There's that kind of saying of, you know, buy cheap, buy twice.
Yeah.
Again, but to Sam's point, it is an expensive task to set something like this up. So it's really what we're trying to do is sort of help navigate what that should look like from an institutional grade so that things you wouldn't necessarily think about now, you need to think about in the future, we can sort of help with that. Which in the past, from personal experience, is great because there's only so much emotional capacity one has to deal with things when you get it wrong, when you're supposed to be focusing on deploying.
Yeah, look, I mean, if, as an operator myself, like I was saying to Sam before the podcast, like this is, you know, if I were to consider raising a fund, like the thing that stops me more than anything else, I mean, capital aside, is how the hell does it work, right? And one of the problems is, you know, there's a lot of programs out there, some great programs, Newton Venture Program, you know, you've obviously got, you know, various fellowships and you know, you've now got Included VC and Diversity VC and all these sort of, you know, programs out there to help bring emerging managers into venture. But those are all sort of tailored towards how do you think about your fund thesis? How do you go out and build community? How do you source deal flow? All of that sort of stuff, which clearly is a critical part of being a VC. Yep. But actually the whole infrastructure that goes behind it is massively opaque. And I think what I love, like as someone who has thought on and off whether this is something that I should do, you take away some of that pain, right? Like you're not some of the pain, almost all of the pain, because you're able to guide people through that process, right?
I think one of the things then when we're kind of at the drawing board with this was what is it that we are first and foremost? We are a clear, transparent investor. That is what we do.
So LP first.
Yeah. We are investor LP first. That is our bread and butter. That's what we do. And that's our core focus. What we didn't think the market needed was another educational platform of, you know, come or teach you how to do this. In theory, you know, you're probably quite good at that. It's just that, like you say, I'm not familiar with this. I need help with it. So,
Yeah, I do also think the fundraising process, particularly for prospective GPs, is just so opaque. This isn't like a founder where they can go online and potentially have a look at databases and see all of these.
Where do you find a family office, essentially?
Exactly. These are very hidden entities who are investing in this asset class. So how do we connect you potentially with some of those entities to make that a more efficient fundraising process for the GPs that we're working with? I'm a big fan of programs like VC Labs and all of those great programs you mentioned that bring underrepresented talent into the market. But I do think the missing piece is, number one, capital.
Yep.
You have to have capital there. What we're willing to do is be a first ticket into funds. So we're really looking to act as a catalytic investor. And equally, that piece that George can bring with regards to how do you structure correctly? How do we make sure that with your fund one, you do not make any silly mistakes that will then hinder your fund two, fund three, fund four?
I mean, just as you were saying that, like the capital element is not even just finding LPs, right? Yep. It is, to your point, okay, do you have the personal runway to get you through the first couple of years? But then what about GP commit, right? Like how do you fund that? Yep. How do you, you know, I know a lot of emerging managers structure that into their fees as a clawback, but okay, what is best practice around that? Yep. What sort of LPs will accept that? Which ones won't, right? And the other thing, and I think, you know, there's always this whole thing in venture about gatekeepers, right? And I think a lot has been done to reduce those barriers, and everyone's, as you say, open online, certainly founder to VC.
Yes.
And indeed, I would argue that as a VC, you know, your main job is to attract deal flow to you and to hunt for deal flow, right? Like it's got to be two way. But when you're a VC raising yourself from LPs, that hunting process is a lot harder. I mean, we've had plenty of managers on this podcast, you know, who've talked about 2, 3, 4 year fundraising processes, you know, where you know, maybe the first million is okay or reasonably okay to find, but it's the next 2, 5, 10 that becomes harder. Or you get to a 10 million, you've got a 20 million target. Do you do your first close at 10? Do you push out the additional rate? And I think that whole kind of that gatekeeping, as I said, has been one of the things that has brought kind of, I guess, this venture as an asset class has made it more opaque, rather, I think, to anyone coming in. And I think what's great is that you're opening that up. And equally for LPs, I guess you're adding value because you're essentially doing a first stage filter, right?
Exactly.
Yep. I mean,
exactly what...
In theory, exactly, yeah. I mean, we spent a lot of time, so we launched... 6-8 weeks ago
8 weeks ago.
Yeah, we've had north of 450 funds apply, which is a lot to get through, but we're getting through those, and we're seeing a lot of really interesting stuff out there, and if we of filtering those down to, I mean, we love to invest in everyone if possible, but, you know, the ones that we will be doing, we're going to be really supporting them and then getting them through. And naturally, if we're coming in as an anchor investor, other LPs out there are like, oh, this is fantastic. Like, these people are reviewing all this stuff. We've got institutional grade due diligence going into this. Is there a co-investment opportunity to come alongside you? Not as part of us, but as another LP into the fund.
Yeah.
And creating awareness of that because, you know, a family office doesn't have a massive board outside its building saying, come on in. You don't know what their strategy is. But like as a VC, it's slightly different. And we had a meeting with a manager this week. He's very good at leading around, bringing in co-investors and formulating that together with the founder. It's slightly different. But again, it's working with them quite closely. The other things that I think the ecosystem needs more is there's a lot of really, like you say, underrepresentative potential managers out there that based on merit are fantastic. How can we get them to be launching funds? And that's something that we're particularly interested in doing. We're trying to work with certain parties at the moment to create funding, mm-hmm. almost grant funding, mm-hmm. For emerging managers that come from underrepresented background. So if we can work with that, I mean, take example. If you're a founder and you're looking for grant funding, you apply to Innovate UK, launch this fantastic business. Yeah. Okay, well, how about someone who wants to launch a fund? You know, it's an equally as, if not slightly more challenging in different respects, entrepreneurial journey to launch a fund.
Yeah.
It is challenging. And where does the support for someone to do that? And like you said, unless you can take 18 months out of it. And I suppose, again, if you look at it, I'm particularly interested in operator background, emerging managers or managers. I mean, obviously the state's 60%, we're about 6-8%, and we want to boost that. How can we do that? So that's something we're particularly interested in, the sort of grant funding element to support these people before they've even launched their fund.
I mean, I think that, I mean, as an operator, like it's music to my ears. It's definitely, again, one of the things that we've talked about on the podcast a great deal, this sort of disconnect between, within venture in UK and Europe, where you have mainly managers coming from a financial background rather than an operating background. Yep. And therefore, how they think about venture and how they think about what deals to take on is very different from the US, where you tend to see bigger bets being taken on much earlier stage businesses based on vision rather than on pure economics, right? So I think the old joke was always in the Valley you get funded on a deck in New York you get funded on revenue, and in the UK you get funded on profit. Like it's kind of that sort of situation. But I think, you know, if you have more people with an operating background who understand the challenges, especially in this current environment where you really intrinsically understand the challenges that founders are going through as they're as they are building their business, I think that can only be positive. So tell me how it is that you both met and why you decided to put this together, right? Because it feels like a great match, given that you have very complementary backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So George having been an operator and fund builder, Sam coming much more from that kind of regulatory and LP side of the table. But what was it that brought you together and what galvanized you to launch Thema? Yeah.
I think certainly from my side, I mean, most people in the ecosystem know Sam. just because by the nature of what he's been doing over the last few years, he's obviously got an incredible reputation, a great track record. And
very kind words, George.
Yeah, well, I speak the truth. and someone that I'd always kind of always familiar with. I think it's about a year ago, we just sort of crossed paths, but like a lot of people do in the ecosystem, and started talking about our passion for emerging managers. I obviously went on a rant about how challenging it was. And Sam was kind of on a rant on the kind of return profiles.
Yeah.
And we're like, and I think the two conversations just started to evolve quite easily in that sense between the two of us.
Yeah.
And then very much when you look at kind of co-founders, your backgrounds are very complementary to each other.
Yeah.
You know, you're not the same person from JP Morgan 1 and 2. It's very much different backgrounds. How can we complement each other? And then what I hadn't seen, and maybe you had to this point, but we have strategic VCs adding value other than just capital. Why do we have that in the LP space? And how can we boost the profile and support emerging managers? And that, I suppose, is how it came about, certainly from my side.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree with that. I think the VC ecosystem within the UK and Europe wider is still relatively small as a as an asset class in general. So I think over the years, I'd heard your name. I think we'd had a few chats here and there, but I really think it was the core passion that both of us have for first-time emerging fund managers was very apparent. And also that awareness of where our blind spots are. I do not have the same level of skills that George has with regards to structuring funds. My bag is, okay, I believe that I can invest in good funds, access good funds, maybe help first-time GPs in their institutionalization. But George is the person to go to on structuring. So having that sort
of complementary... So you pick key structures, essentially.
Yeah, essentially, essentially.
And it works really well. Yeah. It's a really nice process. It's go through the filter, but we make decisions together in terms of... Because effectively what we're trying to back here is people that want to build fund management businesses. Yeah. It's not just, I want to launch a VC and see what happens. We want to get... We want to support. We want to be as supportive as much as they need. We're obviously not going to teach them to suck eggs. They're probably very good at what they do. Yeah. But it's, like you say, I mean, you can go on the fundraising path for 2 years. And a lot of that could be down to your structuring. Is it what LPs are looking for? Are they comfortable investing in that vehicle, that domicile, et cetera, et cetera? And if you've got some people to help you, you know, cut that down that time from a structuring point, also from a co-investment point, but also, you know, again, we're not afraid to be first money in.
Yeah, no, I look, I mean, I think it is wholly needed in the ecosystem. I mean, like, you know, you ask most emerging managers, should you be structuring in Jersey? Should you be structuring in Liechtenstein or should you be going out to Bermuda? I'm like, I don't know how people make that decision without prior context, right? Yeah. Like, it's that old story, you know, to succeed, you need to have failed, right? So you need to have been through the process to understand the process to then... and do it again yourself. Yeah. Most of us haven't raised a VC fund, right? Most emerging managers. I mean, like a lot of the, you know, I think we all sit on similar WhatsApp groups. A lot of the emerging managers that, you know, that we know come from like all sorts of, from, you know, they've come from a legal background or they've come from a community building background or they've come from military backgrounds or whatever it might be, but nothing which would necessarily point to like, oh, okay, yeah, that is the obvious person to go out and raise a fund, like from the outside looking in, right?
But that's what I also love about venture.
Yeah.
Is the diversity of backgrounds that come towards it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's part of the reason which I love working with the people that we do. It's always a delight to do that.
Yeah. I mean, one of the questions that you touched on, right? So the return profile from emerging managers, like there's been a fair amount written, certainly about US EMs where, you know, return profiles tend to be better than most established managers. What does that look like in the UK? And obviously you probably have some stats from the bank.
I mean, it's very similar with regards to first time emerging fund managers can outperform. I would say there is a very clear caveat there. It's can outperform. Equally, the downside tends to be lower.
Okay.
But having said that, it's really about that selection piece. And essentially from the sort of 7-8 years I've been a limited partner, you do see people and you almost know very quickly that they either have a vision and a passion and they have that conviction over the long term in what they're building out and they understand that it may take a while to materialize but it will produce great returns, or they have something very unique with regards to a sort of community that they're tapping into that is defensible, that can't be cannibalized by the tier one VCs across Europe. So first time emerging fund managers, it makes complete sense from a returns perspective, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And I think that is the big point. No one gets sacked for investing in a billion plus late stage VC fund. People can get sacked for investing in a 20 million pound fund that never gets off the ground.
So. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. So talking about some of those pain points, right? There's a lot of chat and chatter about the pain in the market currently, both for startups looking to raise from VCs, but also from VCs looking to raise from LPs, right? Especially if they are emerging managers. Yep. So what is your current view of the market more generally? And what sort of advice are you giving to allocators coming to you for the first time looking to raise their first fund?
Yeah, so from my perspective, the start of this year with regards to limited partners has been quite promising. I've seen lots of limited partners come back to the market and start speaking to funds. Hopefully, we'll start to see some more commitments towards the back end of, let's say, Q3 this year. ultimately, I think one of the biggest challenges for first-time and emerging fund managers is that piece around track record.
Yeah.
People find there's lots of entities, particularly institutional entities, who publish that they will invest in first-time and emerging fund managers. However, I think we'd all agree that their definition of a first-time and emerging fund manager actually looks a bit more like a fund two, fund three, fund
yeah,
four.
Yeah. Show me you've angel invested or have deployed someone's capital into 10
exactly
businesses and show us the return.
Exactly. Yeah. So ultimately, what I think the European LP ecosystem essentially needs to get slightly better at is if people truly want to invest in first-time fund managers, understanding, okay, maybe they don't have a very classical investment track record where you can point to TVPI, DPI, IRR, who the co-investors are, but that doesn't necessarily mean they haven't built intrinsic value in underlying portfolio companies they may have invested in or companies that they have built from the ground up. So that sort of operator experience, I think that's something that we're really focused on with first-time fund managers. It's, okay, let's say you haven't had the capital to invest or you haven't had the same level of capital you would have with a slightly bigger fund that you are raising now. Can you prove to me that you would have had an allocation? So can you invest a very small amount of capital and go to the founders that you're investing in and say, if we would have had more money, would you have accepted us into this round? Can you sign this? And then in 3, 4, 5 years time, potentially when I'm diligencing...
So essentially like an LOI.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
But a reverse LOI.
Yeah, potentially when I'm diligencing these founders in 3, 4 years time, they will say, okay, yeah, we would have given them an allocation if they'd had this fund off the ground. Equally, with regards to track record, I think the LP ecosystem just needs to get more sophisticated with what they're looking for, in the sense of, I think GPs can embed a sort of North Star metric into what they're doing that aligns with their value add proposition, showing that to limited partners and then showing how that has some intrinsic value that feeds out into returns for me as a limited partner in the long term. That's great. I can overlook a very nascent TVPI if you can show to me that there is value in these companies. It just hasn't come out in an up round just yet because maybe the track record's too new.
Or how you as a GP can draw out that value,
yeah,
right?
Like, exactly.
Like how you can be helpful in VC speak. Because that comes back to kind of operator versus sort of more financial style GP, right? Because again, in this sort of a market, and like I have a very strong thesis around this, that there are going to be lots of, for example, businesses that raised at very heady valuations 2-3 years ago, coming back to market, they're not going to find additional capital. But if you're a VC that is able to sort of see, okay, well, actually, yes, but if you restructured like this and if you actually chain this around and, okay, maybe the founder needs to step to the side or step out or whatever, if you as a GP can show that, okay, these are the actions I would have taken and I have the credibility that I would be listened to, then that's going to be, you know, that's going to be valuable to an LP, because then you're not just talking about, well, okay, can you deploy my capital, but can you actually add true value to the capital as well, right?
I think that's that value add piece that we talked about, yeah, in the VC space. What do you bring other than just capital? And I think if you're looking at very competitive rounds, then, you know, you've got to have that edge that the entrepreneur needs. And maybe, you know, that might be the same, again, mentality that we take towards the China GPs that we're working with. From time to time, they can just come and ask and see if we can support them in that journey as well.
Yeah. So it sounds like overall the market has not yet picked up fully, but it is getting there.
Yep.
I think the one thing that I took from what you were saying, Sam, as well, is that, and again, like it's just a revolving conversation on this podcast, is Europe just a bit too risk averse, right? Like, is that part of the problem? I always think about it. So, you know, my wife is Italian. We spend a lot of time in Italy. And I'm always shocked that Italy doesn't have a really massive venture ecosystem, given that private equity was essentially birthed in Italy. And actually recently we've had 2 or 3 Italian VCs on the podcast, and there's some really interesting stuff happening now. But it definitely feels to me that in general, Europe just it has a bit of risk aversion. Venture is not as sexy as it is maybe in the US. And that's equally kind of backed up by then what happens post venture when you're looking at exiting, because exits in Europe tend to be relatively anemic compared to the US. Mm. But would you agree? Is that risk aversion partly at play?
I would say, again, I don't want to sound like just saying the same thing over and over, but I do think a lot of it comes down to the limited partners within Europe.
That's what I mean.
I think a big part of it is, if you have a look at pension fund capital, such a small amount actually goes into the asset class that the majority of LP capital just isn't patient, particularly within first-time fund managers. I sit on lots of LPACs, and I've historically sat on lots of LPACs. I've had family officers that sit alongside me on those LPACs, and they're investing in a pre-seed fund and asking in year four, five, where's my liquidity?
Wow.
When are you going to provide us DPI back?
10 years from
exactly,
now.
exactly, or more. Yeah, sure. So I think the lack of patient capital is definitely having an impact on the ecosystem. And what that causes is a sort of lack of conviction for some of these venture funds, because ultimately they have to sometimes pivot their strategy, not because they don't believe in their core strategy, but because their strategy maybe isn't the flavor of the month that will allow them to raise a fund two, a fund three, which means they're always drifting strategy, which is one of my big bugbears personally, but I completely understand why they would do that to raise bigger funds and stay on that sort of VC trend of, okay, we need to raise a 30 and then a 80 and then a 150 style fund. And again, it comes back to the point of, realistically, the ambition within the UK, particularly for venture funds, is how quickly can we raise US endowment capital?
Yeah.
And the reason why is that capital tends to be quite sticky, big checks, good LPs. We don't have that dynamic in Europe, which means people are scaling these funds far too quickly. And the best way sometimes to do that is drifting away from your original conviction that would have made you a great return.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And actually, we had Francesco Petticarari on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, he's raising Silicon Roundabout Ventures Fund 1. Mm-hmm. And not quite to the extent that you just talked about there, Sam, but like one of the things he said was when he was talking through his thesis with someone, they were like, no, that isn't what you do. You invest in deep tech. And he was like, he literally said deep tech is marketing bullshit. Like that was his comment. But it was like, okay, but if that's what I'm going to need to have to say to be able to raise from the LPs, that's what I'm going to have to do, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. We literally had this conversation yesterday with a GP in the sense of 90% of value add is just a marketing tool to LPs.
100%, yeah.
It's essentially, what do these LPs want to hear for me to actually justify the fees that I'm being paid? Some of the best value add is, okay, can we leverage our network to help this company raise its, let's say, Series A round? It's not actually all of this fluffy sort of stuff that's in a deck by any means. Mm. So I would say there is a lot of marketing in venture, and a lot of that marketing is done for my benefit as a limited partner.
Yeah.
I do think the limited partner scene, from what I've witnessed over the last decade or so, is evolving.
Yeah.
A lot of the family offices, because predominantly they're going to be your LPs when you're doing these funds, where, you know, they've made a lot of money in property, in sort of real assets. And now they're kind of shifting. There might be a generation shift, but I think all the reports, you can read them everywhere, sort of saying, you know, they are moving to venture. Mm. And I think there's a sort of journey that certainly some of the family office I've spoken to, either sophisticated or non-sophisticated, about the asset class, is that they tend to sort of dabble themselves directly.
Yeah.
And everything in isolation looks fantastic. You know, you've got 10 companies all doing the same thing. And, you know, as I said earlier on in the podcast, you know, there's no banner outside saying, you know, come we write us, £1 to £5 million tickets. Yeah, yeah. This is it. It's very much inbound, not proactive outbound. And there's no positioning in the market. They might be really strategic investors. They might add a lot of value with their operations.
You just don't know they exist.
But you don't know they exist. But their deal flow, from what I sort of have witnessed, is that generally it is sort of internal sharing.
It's closed networks. And,
yeah, exactly. 100%.
And again, yeah, and so you're not really approaching, that's kind of a deal by deal strategy, whereas, you know, take a step back, look at your portfolio diversification, how do you build out something that could eventually be a return? And I think there's always been sort of a shiver down the back of their spine when fees are mentioned, because, you know, why would I do that when I get sent deals and he sends me the best deals? as part of your journey, you haven't had any failures yet. That's probably why they're coming. And hopefully you will have an outlier or two in there. And what I think is going to shift is that there will have been some recent down rounds given the last few years, or if not, just completely wiped out. And then they'll be like, okay, well, actually, maybe a diversification through funds is actually really interesting. Yep. And actually, those fees could go towards a great manager yep. that might do a slightly better version of mine. And then there's a diversification, which I think you once talked about, of what are LPs then doing? Oh, do we just sit with one manager and keep doubling down on their funds? Yep. Or do I diversify manager, sector, geography, et cetera?
Yeah.
So I think that...
Well, it's portfolio managers. Again, it's portfolio construction, but at the LP level.
Yeah, but I think that's evolving from what it was 10 years ago. Now, I think that everyone's a lot more savvy to the ecosystem and space.
I would agree with that. I mean, I speak to a lot of family offices coming from a family background myself. And the thing that I think most people don't realize or recognize or understand necessarily is that venture as a percentage of their total asset of their total portfolio allocation is probably 5-10 max 15%.
Yep.
It's like high risk, right? Like the majority of stuff they're doing is in private equity, is in listed, is in bonds, is in fixed income, is in, you know, property, etc. So I always, you know, whenever I speak to family offices that is doing direct intervention, typically they tend to be one of two, right? Either it's a single family office where it's been an exited founder of some nation they've set up and they know like that's what they've done. Mm-hmm. Or it's like a more mature family office, which has decided to go into venture because they've got younger people coming through the business or through the family, as it were. And, you know, for a while this was sexy, but I'm not saying that they're only doing it for that reason. But exactly to your point, if your doors aren't open, you haven't got a website saying deals send here, right? You aren't going to see the best of the best. And the whole point, and this goes back to the earlier point we're making, like as a VC, you've got to be getting inbound, and that's a function of how well recognized you're in the market. But part of the reason you're well recognized in the market is because you've gone out and hunted the best deals as well, right? So you've got to work both hand in hand. So, I mean, just to close off that point, you know, for an EM looking to raise their first fund, what is the one piece of advice you'd give to them?
I think, well, okay, I'm going to be the really boring structuring guy again. But try and understand, when you bucket your LP base, what are they comfortable investing in? Mm-hmm. You know, are you launching a Web3 fund and tokenizing it? You know, explaining that is quite difficult to most people. When you're dealing with, you know, maybe a less sophisticated family office shifting into this space, you know, it is literally gobbledygook to them. And so tokenizing stuff, you know, understand your audience, understand what they're comfortable in, then think about, yeah, where am I going to structure it? What capital am I going to raise in the future? Don't think about just fund one. Think about what am I doing, fund two, fund three. It's just like building a startup.
Yeah, yeah.
How do
what
I
are the
do
milestones that I've got
to
reach? Exactly.
One of the most, actually, just reversing back to one of the other points about family offices and VCs I admire is actually Schmedvig.
Okay,
So I think they've done a really good job of putting themselves out in the market, especially as a family office as well.
Yeah, amazing.
I think just to add to George's point, I think from my side, after having a look through sort of 486 decks in the last 8 weeks, being creative, doing something slightly different. You would be surprised how many people think what they're doing is unique, but there's 20, 30, 40 funds trying to raise the exact same strategy.
Do we need another B2B SaaS?
Exactly.
It's like investing in a startup. Everyone has the best CTO. Everyone has the best CTO. Okay. Well, you can't all have the best CTO.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's that differentiator out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Not just your standard. And I suppose your story as well. Like, why have you ended up here and why are you going to succeed in building this out?
Exactly. Yeah. I've still got to figure out my story. I'm not sure 10 years in Papua New Guinea quite hits the ticket. But anyway, look, so related to all of this, and as a kind of final question, how do you view the emerging manager ecosystem in the UK versus, say, the US? And what lessons do you think we could draw from there or even export across the pond to them?
Yeah, I think over the last 10 years, the UK ecosystem with regards to GPs has matured quite significantly. Mm-hmm. I think there's enough data now in the market to show that the UK is a very investable asset class from a investing in funds perspective. I think, again, and I will come back to limited partners, I think one of the pieces that is missing within the UK in particular and across Europe that would really reduce some of the elements of these financial barriers to entry in particular is GP seeding. I don't see anyone in Europe really doing GP seeding with an early stage venture. Mm-hmm. So maybe putting, let's say, 200K to work in five GPs. Mm. Yes, 3 to 4 of them will never raise a fund. And yes, you potentially have lost that capital.
Is that a bit like the angel programs, like say the ADA and various others have put together where they, from an LP, doing it from an LP perspective, to an extent.
Yeah. So it's really, okay, can we give these individuals who we believe could raise a fund, let's say 200,000, allow them to mitigate that financial
barrier? If anyone wants to do that, I'm sitting right here. I can guarantee you've got some great deals on the table. Sorry, carry on.
Can we mitigate that barrier from a financial perspective and really give these people 12 to 18 months runway to really double down on what they're doing? I know from my own personal experience, it's very difficult to pick up 2, 3, 4 advisory roles whilst also trying to fundraise and stay focused on the fundraise. So I think that's the missing piece here. And the economics make complete sense if you structure it in the correct way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just don't see too many people doing that. If anything, I see more family offices doing that than maybe institutional investors or corporate investors.
Almost like search fund type.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think that's a big piece missing. But from an emerging fund manager's perspective, I actually think the UK ecosystem has matured quite a lot. I think a lot of the issues come from the point we touched on earlier with regards to the LP capital and that sort of that LP capital everyone is striving for is in the US with regards to endowment capital. Let's see what happens with regards to the recent reforms, the Mansion House reforms. I'm slightly skeptical, mainly around the robustness of the sort of organizations that might be deploying that capital. Mm. But let's see if that capital does come on board. I think lots of these LPs will have to become more sophisticated because these funds are going to become access constrained. If you have a look across Europe at this moment in time, outside of Axel, which isn't really a European fund index, again, which isn't, and then maybe 0.9, Local Globe to an extent, there aren't too many access constrained funds, which means for me as a limited partner, if I was deploying a very vanilla strategy, I don't have to do anything. The best funds will come to me in Europe.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Anything to add to that, George? Or?
No, I was just thinking about, that value add piece. I've been pleasantly surprised out of those 468, how amazing a lot of them are and the opportunities out there. So as far as what we've seen, it's UK and across Europe as well. So it's from our perspective, it's really exciting what is out there. We kind of hoped to be looking at 468
486,
within the year, but we're, you know,
within 6 weeks, instead.
It's more sad. Sam's gonna have to go on holiday in a minute, but it's more like that's a lot.
I'll send you 487 in a second. Yeah.
and to digest that, and then the data that we're getting and what we're seeing out there, and seeing, you know, the investor base, the hunger that's still there, that's really positive. Yep. And I think if we are in this such down cycle or stagnation period, innovation's coming and it's going to be fantastic to back emerging managers that can invest into this space.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's been really wonderful having you both on the podcast today. For our audience, where is the best place for them to find you online? Are you on LinkedIn? Are you on Twitter? Where can they find you?
Yeah, LinkedIn and Twitter or X, whatever we want to call it now. Yeah. The best way to apply is
Elon's playground. Yeah.
The best way to apply to FEMA, if people are interested, is via the website. We're trying to filter everything through the website just to remove that sort of cold intro, warm intro element of things.
I think that's fair. And we do actually look at every single application via the website. It's when you're talking to VCs who are sort of questioning about inbound deal flow, we are all about inbound. and people, we always say, you know, no matter who it is, if you want to have a conversation, go to the website. That's the best way.
Amazing. Well, look, thank you so much for joining me in the studio today. It's been absolutely wonderful speaking to you, and really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for having us.